So first up, we've got Dr. Samantha Hearn, Senior Lecturer in Anthropology and Programme Director for the MA and PhD in Anthrozoology at University of Exeter. Sam's research to date has explored a wide range of human coexistences and conflicts with a wide range of different species: foxes, sheep, horses, baboons, dogs, pigs, leopards, cows, elephants, etc. in a range of contexts. Quite a list. So, in fact, I'm going to let Sam kick off. And Sam, if anything goes wrong, just give us a shout and we'll try and fix this. We'll all cross our fingers. But yes, thank you, Dr. Samantha Hearn.
Okay, great. So thank you very much. And thank you, well, firstly for letting me speak to you all, and also for accommodating my unforeseen circumstances, which mean that I can't make it to be with you in Sheffield. So yeah, I'm very disappointed that I can't be in the room physically, but I hope that the technology holds out at least for the duration of the paper. So yeah, I'm talking about conserving street dogs. I also wanted to thank the technical team for all their help in getting this set up, so thank you. I'm talking about conserving street dogs, which might seem a bit surprising and potentially controversial. So I'm looking forward to hearing people's comments and feedback. And this is very much a work in progress, so I hope you'll bear with me. So the World Health Organization places the current global dog population at around 700 million. Based on existing case study surveys and modeling techniques, approximately 75% of the global dog population could be classified as stray. The World Organization for Animal Health defines stray as any dog not under direct control by a person or not prevented from roaming. Consequently, the category stray is a spectrum with lost companions at one end and feral animals at the other. So in this paper, and following the work of Krithika Srinivasan, I prefer the term street dogs to denote free-roaming dog populations in urban contexts. However, I do use the term stray, street, and free-roaming dogs interchangeably in this paper. So free-roaming dogs present numerous risks to human health and safety, particularly in underdeveloped contexts where they're widely implicated in the transmission of zoonotic diseases such as rabies and in causing physical damage to humans, their property, and other animals. For example, they pose risk to endemic wildlife in the form of predation and zoonoses, although the exact extent of the risk is debated and varies from one context to the next. Consequently, free-roaming dogs tend to be heavily managed, either through culling or through trap-neuter-release or trap-vaccinate-neuter-and-release programs. And these management programs are usually directed towards the reduction and eventual eradication of stray dog populations. The World Organization for Animal Health established a series of guidelines on stray dog population management in light of growing concern over the issues, particularly of rabies transmission, during revisions to the 23rd edition of its Terrestrial Animal Code in 2013. Their current recommendations on stray dog population control are expected to be followed by all 180 member countries. However, not all members have official stray dog management policies, and the reality is that the development and implementation of management policies varies considerably, even within national contexts. Of greater concern from an ethical perspective is the fact that killing otherwise healthy dogs is not only the most common form of management strategy employed globally, even in developed countries such as the UK, but the methods used to dispatch dogs frequently violate the welfare standards set out by the World Organization of Animal Health and cause unnecessary and protracted suffering, for example, electrocution, strangulation, poisoning, and decompression chambers. In the case of Europe, stray dog management has been subjected to neoliberal deregulation and is one of the few animal welfare issues which does not fall within the exclusive competence of the EU. Indeed, while the World Organization for Animal Health guidelines emphasize the need for parallel approaches in controlling stray dogs, each member state, as a member of the organization, considers how most appropriately to use these international guidelines in their national context. In most countries, the management of strays is further deregulated at national level, becoming the responsibility of local authorities who are also able to interpret guidelines as they see fit, and who often farm out the practical implementation of their management to private contractors who in turn make their own interpretations. In the European Union, Article 13 of the Treaty of Lisbon recognises animals as sentient beings. Consequently, member states are expected to, quote,
pay full regard to the welfare requirements of animals, end quote, in the development and implementation of pathogens. The emphasis on welfare is frequently negated in practice, however, in view of the caveat that, quote, religious rights, cultural traditions and regional heritage must also be respected. Despite lacking legal competence, in November of 2013, the EU intervened in one member state's treatment of stray dogs on the grounds that animal welfare objectives were not being met, following the passing of the Stray Dogs Euthanasia Law by the Romanian government in September 2013. The killing law, as it came to be known, was rushed through Parliament following the tragic death of a four-year-old boy in Bucharest who was allegedly killed by a stray dog. And I say allegedly because lots of internal and external commentators have questioned the exact cause of his death. The law passed by the Romanian President against the wishes of Romanian MEPs, the EU's Animal Welfare Inns Group, and according to a survey by Animal Welfare Organisation Fearfoten, 62% of the Romanian people called for the eradication of strays who are to be rounded up, caught and dispatched if not claimed within 14 days. Since the law was passed, more than 10,000 Romanian stray dogs have been killed. However, the World Animal Health Organisation recognises that, quote, the euthanasia of dogs used alone is not an effective control measure. The historical figures for stray dogs in Romania corroborate this view. For example, between 2001 and 2007, over 144,000 strays were killed by Romanian authorities, and these deaths had little impact on the total population of strays in the country in subsequent years. Moreover, the World Organization for Animal Health states that, quote, if used, euthanasia should be done humanely. Consequently, the Stray Dog Euthanasia Law was in direct contravention of the recommendations, with dogs being strangled, shot, clubbed, poisoned and killed in other inhumane manners by vigilantes, as well as by the state-authorised dog control officers. In a press conference following two EU delegation visits to Romania in December 2013 and January 2014 to investigate allegations of welfare violations, the vice chair of the EU Animal Welfare Intergroup stated that many of the letters of complaint they'd received concerned the fact, quote, that dogs were now being killed in the streets in front of children, a situation the delegation was able to corroborate during their visits. They went on to assert that during their visits, the delegation witnessed dogs in public shelters who had been deprived of food and water and were literally starving to death. A survey conducted on behalf of the animal rights NGO Fearfoten by Romanian market researchers found that the preferred alternatives of the Romanian people they surveyed were keeping strays in shelters until suitable homes could be found, with 84% opting for this, and neutering and releasing those animals who were found to be, quote, docile, with 72% in favour of this option. These preferences have been at last partially reflected in revised legislation. Indeed, national and international protest resulted in the repeal of the Stray Dog Euthanasia Law on the 20th of June 2014. The Dogs Management Law, which was brought in to replace it, came into effect on the 1st of January 2015. Under this new legislation, all non-pedigree owned dogs have to be registered, a process which includes neutering, vaccination and microchipping. They're also expected to be kept securely on their owner's property. Owners who fail to comply are now issued with hefty fines and the possibility of prosecution. Unowned healthy dogs who are caught are neutered and retained indefinitely in shelters until they can be rehomed. However, while the new legislation might appear to be a significant improvement in terms of animal welfare, in reality there are several key issues which remain unresolved and which call into question both the ethics of the new law and its feasibility as a sustainable solution. Due to constraints of time, I'm going to focus one of these, the catching, neutering and rehoming movement for the street dogs. Dogs are rounded up and typically caught by authorities using wire nooses. These dogs are placed in crates with others before being transported sometimes quite long distances to public shelters. The process whereby dogs are caught by private rescuers and taken to private shelters is much more humane and typically involves dogs being lured with food before being caught and transported alone or with familiar animals to a private shelter or sometimes to the rescuer's home. The structural facilities and levels of care provided by the many public shelters around the country fall short of the World Organization for Animal Health welfare standards. Aside from countless reports and documentary evidence of appalling conditions produced by individual rescuers and NGOs, and the fact that the EU Animal Welfare delegation also found the shelters were not fit for purpose, the mortality rates of dogs in shelters provides irrefutable evidence. For example, in 2012, the last year for which figures are publicly available, a total of 1,402 dogs were caught by the authorities in one municipality and taken to local public shelters there. Of that number, 62% died. 17% of these deaths were the result of dogs being intentionally killed. However, the remaining 45% of dogs died from other causes, including disease, injury, starvation, dehydration, hyper and hypothermia, while in transit or while in the care of the shelters. The new dogs management law does not address the resourcing and culture of these shelters. Once in shelters, former street dogs also have to adapt to living in close proximity with humans, something which is not always easy for animals who are, in many cases, closer to wild canids than domestic dogs. In Romania and elsewhere around the world, welfare organisations are working to find strategies to get stray dogs off the streets and convert them into valuable commodities or even socially productive citizens. In Romania, a pilot project launched by Fear Fulton in 2014 trains former street dogs as assistance dogs and places them with disabled humans. At the height of the cull, there was considerable effort made by NGOs to work with local individuals on the ground who were prepared to negotiate the shelters and local authorities to bring out the most needy, i.e. ill, injured, very young or very old individuals, as well as the most adoptable, and I refer to these as anthropophilic dogs, so particularly sociable dogs, from public shelters and market them to international adopters, a strategy which has had considerable precedent in other countries with large stray dog populations. The individuals who take action to save stray dogs in Romania and elsewhere rely on finding private, often international fundraisers and adopters who cover the costs of feeding, neutering, vaccinating, microchipping, worming and transporting dogs to overseas rescue organisations or straight to their, quote, forever homes where it's hoped that they will become valued companion animals. But this strategy is highly contentious, especially given that all destination countries have their own stray dog populations, albeit at different degrees. In relation to the dogs themselves, however, these human management strategies don't take into account the fact that in many contexts, these street dogs have often carved out viable niches for themselves as quasi-wild animals and have developed unique cultures based primarily on social interactions with other dogs and negotiating their shared coexistence with humans with caution. As the Coppingers have argued in their recent book, What is a Dog?, the adaptability, sociality and physicality of dogs has enabled them to thrive outside of the domus while still being intimately connected to humans. They are able to survive alongside humans more successfully than other canids such as wolves. They get enough nutrition from human food waste to maintain a large population without the need to predate. They reproduce more quickly than other canids and they are familiar to us. They arguably tolerate humans and are tolerated by them more generously than other free-roaming canids. The Coppingers suggest that if human beings were to disappear, free-roaming dogs would quickly follow. But what about the converse? What happens to humans when free-roaming dogs disappear? Research conducted by the International Fund for Animal Welfare staff working in Bosnia on a trap-neuter return-release policy found to their surprise that the people they surveyed felt very strongly that their lives would be impoverished without the large populations of free-roaming dogs in their neighbourhoods. The fact that the majority of Romanian people surveyed by Fear Fulton also preferred trap, neuter, release to culling suggests that some humans, many humans, are prepared to coexist with street dogs. And certainly this is the case in many non-Western countries, for example, as documented by Krithika Srinivasan's work on street dogs in India. I argue that in many of the contexts where they exist, and particularly in urban areas where they do not habitually come into conflict with endemic wildlife, there might be an argument for maintaining healthy free-roaming dog populations. And to maintain rather than reduce their populations, they would be need to be allowed to reproduce. So this argument challenges normative ideas of canine welfare and hinges, as Srinivasan notes for India, on seeing free-roaming dog populations as comprising collectives of autonomous sentient beings who have come into existence because of anthropogenic negligence, and whose well-being therefore remains a human responsibility. It also relies on an attempt to consider what's in the best interest of the dogs themselves, not as pawns in a biopolitical game where euthanasia or captivity are imposed upon them,
but rather as domesticates gone feral who thrive or fail on the basis of the decisions they make for themselves. So I've been conducting research on the situation in Romania in relation to street dogs and the flow of rescued dogs into the UK and elsewhere for over the past 3 years. I've conducted numerous interviews with individuals who've been involved with the rescue of Romanian dogs affected by the stray dog euthanasia law in Romania and the UK, and without exception all felt strongly that it was in the best interest of the dogs to be, quote, saved from the streets and brought into domestic environments. Obviously, Romania at the time of the cull was an extreme case, but even in relation to low-risk contexts where free-roaming dogs are tolerated by their human neighbours, even welcomed, my interviewees revealed a strong bias towards taking dogs off the streets and bringing them into human homes. This desire to bring dogs into the domus on the fact that they are members of the species Canis familiaris is, however, potentially misguided. My research interest in Romanian street dogs was sparked when I inadvertently acquired two former Romanian street dogs who'd been rescued from the cull and shipped to the UK. So one of them is the middle puppy in this image, and this is the second one. In addition to interviewing rescuers, I've also interviewed UK residents who have adopted former Romanian strays. Admittedly, my sample size for this strand of the research is small, just 10 interviewees in total so far, and it's very much a work in progress, but the results are, I think, significant. While 2 out of the 10 individual dogs thrive in their new forever homes, the majority, 8 out of 10, have, 3 years on, found and continue to find it extremely difficult to make the transition from street to hearth. Obviously, in many cases, the alternative was death, and certainly this was the case for my 2 dogs and 6 of the others in my pilot study. But I cannot shake the feeling, and this is a feeling also shared by 6 of my interviewees, that I'm living with 2 wild animals who find the human world immensely stressful and confusing. While they're fond of me and their human family members, they much prefer doing their own thing with each other, with other dogs or with other non-human animals. And indeed, research on street dogs in shelter contexts has also found that they perform poorly in the sorts of tests which rely on an intersubjective or empathetic connection with humans. For example, following pointing gestures. And street dogs' performance mirrors wolves more closely than it does other domestic dogs. Obviously, it's important to recognise the individuality of animals in terms of management. A one-size policy does not fit all. And I used the term anthropophilic earlier to refer to those former street dogs who thrive when brought into the domus, as even though they have been living on the streets, they feel at ease with humans. And why this might be the case is something I'm interested in researching. Oh, sorry, these are my two now. This is an example of an anthropophilic dog who was used to try and lure these puppies. The one in the bottom left is one of mine from a building site in Romania. But what should be done with the others, i.e. those dogs who are not fully at home in houses? The Coppingers note that street dog populations correlate to human populations and suggest that one street dog needs the food waste of 14 humans in order to be able to survive. They argue that street dog populations should be treated as any other wild population, as when left unmanaged, they will self-regulate. This raises ethical issues, obviously, concerning welfare and brings us back to human responsibility towards this domestic species gone feral. If dog populations are provisioned, they increase. If they are neutered or culled, local populations disappear, but others, including other canine species, come in to replace them. If they're left to roam without human intervention, a certain number of them will inevitably suffer to some degree, and few will see the sort of life expectancy of their companionable counterparts. But what's more important to a dog? And that's obviously a much bigger question for another time, and one that I'm going to be attempting to answer during a 3-year comparative research project focusing on the lived experience of individual street dogs in a range of case study contexts, which I'm starting in January with colleagues at Exeter. But what I'm hoping to do here and now, though, is to raise questions about current management approaches and suggest that rather than culling or removing dogs, conserving their populations in situ, and as I've already said, this is an activity which would also include allowing them to breed, in contexts where they would not be under direct attack from humans and where they would not pose a threat to threatened endemic wildlife populations, could be considered.
So my previous work on the conservation and management of another highly adaptive urban resident, the Shaka baboon in Cape Town in South Africa, focused on the ethics of managing these free-roaming primates, and they share numerous similarities with street dogs, and in many respects pose much greater threats to human populations than street dogs do. But I was particularly interested in the fact that the baboons had developed unique cultural traits and were able to thrive alongside humans. In terms of their management, they represent a particularly useful comparative. The caged troops are quite heavily managed through the use of monitors, i.e. local people who are paid to escort them during the day and keep them out of trouble. And transgressive individuals, such as this chap here, who can see just by the bin at the University of Cape Town, an individual called Bart, who started attacking students on campus and so was singled out for euthanasia. So transgressive individuals like Bart are singled out for removal, but they are not sterilised or culled or relocated as a collective. They've carved out a niche for themselves, utilising human food waste and the seeds from introduced pine plantations, all of which is much more nutritionally dense than their traditional diet of famous. So baboons are conserved because they're a wild endemic animal, but they're also widely recognised as valuable members of a multi-species community. But why might street dogs be important to conserve, especially in areas including cities where they've developed some surprising strategies for survival? And I'm thinking particularly, for example, on Lemon's work on dogs using the metro system in Moscow. The cognitors argue that street dogs fill a niche we ourselves have created. If they're removed, others move in to fill it. They cite coyotes and wolves in US cities, but here in the UK, obviously foxes have taken the place of stray dogs on city streets. Our shared evolutionary history and their ubiquity as companion animals mean that we as a species understand dogs as a species better than we do the other animals who would and do take their place. While street dogs are subjected to cruelty and management, as are any other feral or wild animals, there is, I would argue, some latent recognition that dogs are somehow human responsibility, victims of the domesticated animal contract gone awry. So, to conclude then, current stray dog management and policies are ultimately aimed at the eradication of stray dog populations. As dogs are neutered, as owners are encouraged to take responsibility for their dogs, domestic spaces will become more sparsely populated until only the odd individual acquires a transient identity stray after escaping or being abandoned, before they're quickly collected, incarcerated, and either killed or rehomed. This is the state of play for dogs in many developed countries such as the UK, where the presence of free-roaming dogs is not tolerated for long. As such, the study of contemporary street dog populations represents a form of what I've termed urgent anthropology, which might also contribute something to the burgeoning field of extinction studies. Key proponents of extinction studies, Tom van Doren, suggests that because anthropogenic activity impacts on the lives and deaths of so many other animals, and because our actions can bring about the end of whole ways of life, narratives which seek to understand this loss might be communicated, quote, in a way that significantly implicates us, causally, perhaps emotionally, and certainly ethically, end quote. As I've noted here, street dogs originated as domestic dogs who were either released or abandoned and left to fend for themselves. Our former domesticates have effectively rewilded themselves. And as part of my research, I'll be looking to trial some of the strategies which have proved successful for managing other free-roaming, wild but conserved species, such as baboons, to see how the lives of the dogs might be managed in their best interests, not necessarily just ours. Okay, thank you.